And it's 6 minutes after 10 o'clock. You're tuned to WBAI in New York. The program is Off the Hook. We're on until 11:45 tonight, hoping to raise some money for the radio station to keep things going here so we can continue to bring you news of happenings in the world of cyberspace and individual freedom, liberty, that kind of thing. All that cool stuff that we've grown used to. This is Emmanuel Goldstein here with Fiber Optic, and you know, we've got some pretty exciting news which we want to update you on. I don't know if it's exciting, scary, or what have you, but do you know that that encryption has pretty much been outlawed? Yeah, it's kind of shocking, don't you think? Outlawed. Measures to observe the law in development, production, sale, and use of encryption devices and provision of services in encrypting information. This is a law dated April 3rd, 1995. Now, what it does is it restricts the use of encryption technologies by government agencies, state-owned, private, and foreign entities, and complements a rapidly growing body of law publicly regulating activities which previously were the exclusive domain of government intelligence, various national security agencies, and of the military. The edict, which just came down pretty recently, bans the development, import, sale, and use of unlicensed encryption devices, as well as of protected technological means of storage, processing, and transmission of information, and directs the Federal Counterintelligence Service and other enforcement agencies to ensure compliance and to prosecute violators. It's pretty scary. Did any of you know that encryption has been outlawed? Well, it has been. Look at this. It's what it says. The edict designates the Federal Agency of Government Telecommunications and Information, attached to the Office of the President, as the authority responsible for the review of applications and issuance of licenses. Now, in accordance with this statute, this organization, headed by a director general, reports directly to the president, is responsible for the security of government communications as well as for intelligence operations in connection with encrypted and coded information. They also have a research and development branch, the Academy of Cryptography, several army units, government communications corps, radio surveillance engineering detachments. Now, within its jurisdiction, this organization can issue orders and instruction which are mandatory for all government and private agencies and companies. They issue licenses for encryption activities in accordance with internal regulations and pursuant to the government decree on licensing of certain types of activities, which sets forth general licensing guidelines for competent government agencies. Well, I guess there's one other detail I should point out as far as what this law means to you. It happened in Russia. Didn't happen here, but it's awfully close, because this is something that came down, I'm convinced, a lot of people seem to be convinced, as a result of FBI influence overseas. In other words, we're kind of crusading to various other countries in the world, saying, you guys really should protect yourselves, take control of cryptography before your citizens do. And that way, you'll have some semblance of control. It's a scary thing. I mean, it's really kind of disturbing to see this happening. You might say, yeah, it's Russia. You know, okay, things happen in Russia, but Russia is supposed to be moving towards democracy. There's been a lot of talk in this country about things that are going to be happening here. A lot of people see what happened in Russia very, very recently, within the last month, as something indicative of what could happen here in the very near future. Barbara, you're the one that that spotted this. What do you think?
Actually,
are you surprised?
Spotted the initial occurrence when Boris Yeltsin formed this, I don't know if you want to call it a task force, but at least a government organization known as FAGTI. And they're supposed to actually enforce the unauthorized and unlicensed use of encryption.
Mm-hmm.
And not very long after that, the director of the FBI, Mr. Free, ironically.
Isn't that something? His name is Free.
Yeah.
I think that's just incredible.
He testified before Congress saying that, from what I can make out of it, it's almost as if to say that the digital telephony proposal just isn't enough. It's not enough that we can wiretap any phone line we want to.
I was watching C-SPAN. I was watching those hearings, and they were pretty frightening because basically after the Oklahoma City bombing, he said the biggest problem was people communicating with impunity on the Internet using encryption. We have to do something. We have to address this problem. That's a problem. People communicating freely is a problem.
Yeah.
So that's a problem that he thinks that's a problem. That's what I think. Now, here's an article from Brock Meeks, one of our favorite people, because he's always on top of these things. And this will give you an idea of where the situation is going in this country, anyway. Jacking in from the narco-terrorist encryption port, Brock Meeks with his CyberWire dispatch. The other shoe has dropped several times. In the political backlash and emotional fallout of the bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City, FBI Director Louis Free has begun to wage his own private war on the use of private encryption schemes. According to administration sources, several different proposals are now being discussed on how to implement a policy of government-mandated, government-certified encryption. Does it sound familiar? Sounds like what I just read from Russia. The most hard line of these proposals would outlaw the public's ability to choose an encryption scheme which the government couldn't break under the authority of a court order. Free has left no doubts about his intentions. Not satisfied with the proposal he successfully rammed through Congress last year, the bill that gives law enforcement agencies easy wiretap access to digital conversations at a cost of $50 million in taxpayer money. That's the digital telephony bill. His next target is private encryption. During an appropriations hearing May 11th, Free told a congressional panel, "We're in favor of strong encryption, robust encryption. The country needs it. Industry needs it. We just want to make sure we have a trap door." I'm sorry. It's just so funny. We want strong encryption as long as it's not strong. Oh, boy. Okay, we just want to make sure we have a trapdoor and key under some judge's authority where we can get there if somebody is planning a crime. That's incredible. You know, nobody would have ever caught Timothy McVeigh. He didn't use the net. He didn't use encryption at all. It didn't make a difference. So all of this is kind of a moot point. It wouldn't have applied to this case. You can still blow up buildings and do all kinds of terrorist things without communicating over the net. So it's obviously, that's not the point. Anyway, let's continue with the article. That means an end to private, non-government encryption, which doesn't have keys the government can use. Private encryption schemes allow a person to scramble an electronic message that, if intercepted by an unintended party, renders it unreadable. These scrambling programs are useful to a wide range of people and interests, including researchers who want to keep their proprietary breakthroughs safe from prying eyes, to corporations sending trade secrets to a distant office across the net, to ordinary folks sending a steamy love letter to a lover. But these same encryption programs are being used by terrorists and international drug traffickers as well, claims FBI Director Free, and that makes private encryption schemes a threat to national security. But Free's crusade against encryption has been enjoined by members of the Justice Department, with the gleeful back alley goading the nation's top spook group, the National Security Agency. And when it comes right down to it, your privacy rights don't stand a snowball's chance in hell of outweighing pictures of dead babies or pieces of dead babies. It's really incredible some of the things that they say here. One of them is that they actually think that criminals... Here's a part here. Why would criminals knowingly use a device like the Clipper chip that they know the government could easily tap? Because criminals are stupid, was the FBI's party line. No, I am not making this up. That's right. Now, Free hasn't publicly outlined just how he proposes to resolve the encryption problem. However, according to an FBI source, several plans are in the works. The source refused to detail any specific plan, but added, "Let's just say everything is on the table. Does that include outlawing private encryption schemes?" I said, everything, the source said. Well, I don't know about you, but that makes me feel kind of afraid, doesn't it?
Yes, really concerns me greatly that something like that could just kind of slip through, and no one really seems to know very much about it.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the average citizen who may or may not have heard about encryption, but I'm certain ultimately will see the benefits in it. And it's a shame that it's possible that by the time they realize that, it might be illegal.
Here's something interesting. An NSA source, when questioned about his agency's role in the process, was reluctant to speak. He did say that Clipper was merely act one of a three-part play. Pressed for further details, he said, "Do your own homework." These guys are up to something, and it's pretty scary when you think of it. Except for the rise of an offshore black market encryption trade, the administration is hoping the public will buy off on the fact that, one, it's private industry holding the keys, not government agencies. Two, the availability of choice among several different vendors will squash the imagery of Big Brother. But again, there's that black market, which we'll soon be a part of, I'm sure. And it's going to come. It will have to be a black market. The FBI has already gone around the world preaching the evils of private encryption, trying to get other law enforcement groups to push for outlawing such programs in their own countries. And they already have a convert, Russia. That country recently adopted such a policy. Nice to know. We're following in Mr. Yeltsin's footsteps. Excerpts from Brock Meek's article. You can get the full text of it on 2600.com. FTP to 2600.com. Log in as either anonymous or FTP. And I think it's the first thing you see. We make sure people see things like this. And download that and spread it around so people know about this. That's probably the best thing we can do. Right now, if you want to contact Brock, he's a source of information of all sorts. His address is Brock, B-R-O-C-K, at well.com. You know, the Well is changing their name from well.sf.ca.us to well.com for their official name.
Really?
The other one will still work, but yeah. I just got a note saying that they're going to be officially changing
that. It's about time.
Is it? I kind of like that. I mean, why is it that every other country has to put their two-letter acronym at the end, and we don't? You know, I think everything should be .us if it's truly an international type of thing. Well, that noise that you hear in the background is the sound of Slint as they fade away. And I want to thank them for providing some backup instrumentals for us while we talk about encryption. Thank you, guys. You can go home now. Oh, thank you. All right, that's pretty much what's going on there. Now, we have a story of is it encryption or is it scanners or what?
It's actually a story referring to scanners.
Okay, who are you, first of all?
This is Master Chemist.
Master Chemist.
How
okay, we'll put your test tubes away, we'll play
yes.
those later.
Yes.
All right.
Well, I was actually interested in seeing what the actual story was and trying to get a scanner. I'd heard all these stories, so thought I'd actually see what's going on. Walked into one of the tri-state area's larger electronics centers, and I asked them if I could have a Uniden Barracat 220 XLT. And they asked me, first question out of their mouth was, why do you want this one? Because it happened to be one of their most expensive models.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, I'm interested in scanning. And they were like, well, we have several models that, you know, for a young guy. Well, actually, he said, for a young boy such as yourself.
Oh,
and now being, you know, over 6 feet tall, I kind of get the feeling I don't give that image, but still. He said he had several models that were a lot cheaper and would serve the same function. And I told him that I was interested in getting somewhere in the 800 range, and he immediately looked at me as if I'd committed a crime. And so, things concluded, and I purchased the BC220 XLT, took it home, and part of one of the reasons why I finally did was all over the box,
mm-hmm.
it was written that this scanner receives the 800 public service range. So I was kind of excited about that, but no such luck. So getting it home, on the first couple of pamphlets, this scanner receives the 800 public service range.
Mm-hmm.
And then reading through it, there was small print on the last page that said, this scanner will not pick up cellular phone conversation.
Well, now, that seems like a contradiction there.
That is very true. So, playing with the scanner, I realized that it blocked out all ranges from 868.00 mm-hmm. to 890.00, which I really found quite disturbing. So then I called technical support, which is open 24 hours a day at our good friends at Uniden. And I asked her if there was any reason why my scanner wouldn't pick up between those two ranges. And she told me that it was completely illegal to try and get anything within those two ranges. She's telling me because they were reserved for cellular phone use. And I said, yes, but your product has on the box that it covers completely from 50 to 900 megahertz. And she said, well, that one area is blocked out for the safety of yourself and for those using cellular telephones.
Did she really say for the safety of yourself?
Yes, she did. Okay. She told me that to ask any additional questions, that for my own information, I may want to be aware that I am asking illegal questions.
How can you ask illegal questions?
That's speak of truth.
Oh, boy. Well, I don't think they're speaking of truth there.
The sad issue is, in relation to an article that was in 2600,
mm-hmm.
Which obviously the people at Uniden aren't aware of, the issue of harmonics, that adding 21.4 to any signal you catch that would, say, maybe be in the 868 to 890 range, you can actually hear the echo of what's actually being said. So the truth is that the Barracat 220 XLT does not truly block out all cellular phone conversations. And I found it quite angry that I wasn't able to get that range.
Well, you know, there's one thing that I've noticed over the past past week or so. And that's how I was looking at some scanner ads in various magazines, such as Popular Communications, Monitoring Times, things like that. And you know how they said when they passed this law that they were going to make it illegal to manufacture radios that could get in the 800 megahertz range. Well, it seems to have changed a bit. Now it's if you look at the radios, yeah, they do block those, but they say that 800 to 900 megahertz is reserved for government use only. Now, that's not how they worded the law when they originally passed this thing. They said it was illegal to listen. Now, apparently, if you're a government employee, it's legal for you to listen. Only government employees can listen to cellular phone calls. Now,
what was really disturbing for me is that all over the box was written clear as day, this device will cover the entire 800 range.
Mm-hmm.
It said, actually, I don't want to misquote them. It says, this device will cover the 800 public service range.
Mm-hmm.
And it was written on the box, it was written on the sides of the box, and it was written in the manual several times.
Well, it's probably that public service is how they're getting away with it. Public service area is probably not where the cellular phone calls are, because a number of agencies do use 800 megahertz for various things, not cellular phone calls. But it's still kind of deceptive. Because you go in there thinking you're going to get something. But I would say to people looking to buy something like that, it's really not possible anymore. We were talking about this for a couple of years, actually, and it's finally happened. It's virtually impossible for you to get a scanner that will get cellular phone calls in this country. Now, you can go over to Canada, and you can buy one there. I don't know if they block other frequencies. They might. I know other countries block certain other frequencies. In England, you can't get the police at all. And who knows what frequencies they use. You know, they may use RTV channels for police frequencies over there, for all we know.
If it's in the air, it should be free.
That's logic. You see, you're injecting logic into this, and when it comes to making laws and things like that, I don't know. It's not that easy to assume that. Yeah, we're coming to some pretty weird times here. We're talking about scanners gets you in trouble, and everything is blocked. But one thing that I think will overcome this is ingenuity, figuring out a way to bypass the system. And I think virtually every scanner can be bypassed in some way.
I think it's interesting to note that all you diehard folks out there that still have your old television sets before the whole cable-ready era...
You'd have to turn them in, don't they?
All those old TV sets that still go up to channel 83 on the UHF band, you could tune into the cellular telephone range.
You know, I've never been able to get that to work. I've tried that.
Oh, I've gotten it to work easily.
Uh-huh. Maybe it's a TV set.
You don't need any special antenna or anything. If you're in the city, you could use the old-fashioned... it was a little circular. It was like a piece of wire bent in a circle
mm-hmm.
on the back of the TV set. And you could switch somewhere between channel 70 and 83, You can fine-tune, and you can pick up cellular telephone conversations with no problem at all.
That is something, but it is illegal to do
that. It is illegal to do this.
Very illegal to do that. Unbelievable what we're telling people here. Not that we're telling people how to listen to cellular phone calls. In fact, we're telling them it's illegal to turn your TV set and hear something. It's insane. I don't know. I feel like I'm going into fantasy world here. Well, one thing, when I was looking at that TV set, though, I did notice a lot of weird UHF channels that we get up here. Like, there's a 3D channel. There's a Korean channel. There's all kinds
of... Yeah, there's a 3D channel that's actually comes from Stevens Institute in New Jersey.
Uh-huh. That's kind of neat.
Yeah.
You know, I owe that to looking for cellular phone calls. But there's all kinds of wacky TV stations out there that don't get listed anywhere. So you might want to explore for those, too. So, yeah, that's the latest on scanners. You know, they're kind of elusive. And we're open to hear what people have to say about their experiences. Okay, now to update people on Kevin Mitnick. Again, to update you on our phone number. Remember, we're here to raise money tonight. 212-279-3400. We have a special deal we're going to be getting to in just a couple of minutes. We're up to $1,350 on our total, which is good, but we need to keep those calls coming in. I'm going to present you with some information, and Fiber, I'd like you to listen to this because I don't think you've heard this yet, and this is something I only just got a couple of days ago. This has to do with what happened before Kevin was caught. In fact, this has to do with what happened at the very, very beginning. All right, this is probably having to do with why he was on the run in the first place. Remember, we keep asking these questions. They keep saying he violated probation, but no one knows why. All right. This is a document, the United States versus Kevin David Mitnick, respectfully presenting petition for action of court for cause as follows. It is alleged that the above-mentioned supervised releasee has violated the terms and conditions to wit. One, having previously been instructed regarding the special conditions prohibiting engaging in any illegal or unauthorized access into any computers or telecommunication devices, on August 7, 1992, Mr. Mitnick participated in the unauthorized access of Pacific Bell Computer's confidential voice mail system. This was accomplished through the unauthorized use of confidential and personal passwords of Pacific Bell Telephone Company security investigators who, along with local authorities, have been investigating Mr. Mitnick's employer at the time, Teltech Investigations. Two, the offender had previously been instructed regarding the special condition prohibiting him from associating with or being in the company of any person or persons known to have engaged in the illegal or unauthorized access of computers or telecommunication devices. The offender violated this condition beginning on a date unknown and continuing to at least September 29, 1992, as he maintained association with one Louis DePayne. Mr. DePayne had been convicted of violation of 182/502 Penal Code, conspiracy to commit computer fraud on April 2, 1982. Records reflect that Mr. Mitnick was a juvenile co-conspirator in this offense, for which a petition was requested and sustained against the offender for violation of 502C Penal Code, computer fraud, and 459 Penal Code burglary on June 25, 1981. What do you think of that?
Well, that's pretty interesting. He was basically working for a private investigator?
It sounds to me, yeah, like he had some sort of a job with a private eye, and the private eye was under investigation, therefore Kevin was under investigation for that. It seems a little murky here, using voicemail systems, logging into someone's voicemail account. Again, you know, where's the proof? How did they know it was actually him doing this? And, okay, we're talking about logging into a voicemail system, which presumably was using a default password, which I wouldn't be surprised. And they don't really go into detail as to what it was. I mean, they pretty much classify these crimes all the same way. You enter a mailbox once, even by accident. You know, you enter a default password and say, hey, it works. Or you stalk somebody and you enter their password every single day for their entire lives. They pretty much classify it the same way. He illegally entered a voicemail system. That's the whole basis for saying that his probation has been violated, for making him become a fugitive, for him being on the run for years, for him having this nationwide front-page manhunt going on, and eventually his capture earlier this year. And God only knows, you know, what kind of prison sentence he's eventually going to wind up with. But this, apparently, is where it all began. And, you know, I kind of thought it would be something trivial, and this certainly seems to fit into that. I don't see anything, any real smoking gun there. I intend to look into this a little bit more, see just what was going on. But you know, people do this kind of thing all the time. Even if it's proven that he was doing that kind of thing in the first place, perhaps his employer was doing this kind of thing, and he was just employed by somebody not knowing what they were up to. There's all kinds of possibilities. Doesn't seem like Kevin has been given any benefit of the doubt whatsoever. He is still, by the way, in North Carolina. We're waiting for verification of the address we have for him, and hopefully we'll be able to provide that to people in the weeks ahead. So that's pretty much it as far as that goes.
Now, was Kevin banned from using all computers initially?
No, he wasn't. Obviously, he couldn't have been, because it's very difficult to get through life not using a computer at all. I know he was banned from using a modem. But again, that ended at the end of his probation, which was, I believe, in 1992.
Really?
And from what I understand, from what I hear, and this has not yet been verified, they knocked on his door 2 hours after his probation had ended. 2 hours. And this was at about 2 o'clock in the morning, mind you, because probation ended at midnight. And he had already left. He somehow knew they were going to do that. He always expressed a fear. I remember we had a friend of his on the air a month or so ago who said that Kevin had told him that he had the feeling that a minute before his probation was up, they would get him on something. Well, it wasn't quite that. It was very close, though. They were after him. They were looking for something to get him on, and they did. So that's being repeated many places, many different ways. We have the Kevin Paulson story, which still has not completely worked itself out. And we're going to be here, hopefully, telling you all about them in the weeks and months ahead. But we need your help to do that. Let's, first of all, thank the people that brought us up to where we are now. We want to thank... hang on, first I have to make sure that they want to be thanked. Sometimes they check off a box here that says, don't thank me. Okay. We want to thank Tom from East Rockaway for his generous donation. Margaret from Brooklyn. Julio from Mamaroneck, New York. Mamaroneck is one heck of a place. You know, there's this... I don't know if it's from Mamaroneck, but there's this lady that does a TV show up there called Kaleidoscope. Have any of you ever seen it? It's a cable TV show.
No.
She's incredible. She's absolutely incredible. If anyone out there knows what I'm talking about, you'd do well to tape this show and send me copies. Okay, we also want to thank Carl from Brooklyn for his very generous donation. And Tim from New York, New York. Right here in town. This is a neat one. Catherine from Springfield, New Jersey. Springfield, New Jersey. That's always good to hear from that part of the of our listening range. Thank you for your donation. And Chris from Dover. Dover being the site of the former private sector BBS, 2600's first bulletin board system. And I want to thank Chris from Dover for his donation. And there's a bunch more, I hope, calling in right now. 212-279-3400. We have a special deal. Now, this is kind of an interesting deal, actually, because it involves a lot of us in various ways. A couple of months ago, was it a couple of months ago only that this thing came out?
Yeah, it was...
Seems like forever.
I think it was just around the new year.
Around the new year. That a certain book came out. Certain book called Masters of Deception. That's right, Masters of Deception. We've got a bunch of copies of this. A bunch of copies lying around. This is the book with fiber optic in it. Now, I should point out that this book was met with mixed reviews in the hacker community. and to attest to that, you could sort of say that Josh Quitner and Michelle Sotala's phone numbers were forwarded to various parts of the country by angry hackers at one point. And in fact, that was even written about in Newsday. That would indicate that certain people weren't very happy with it. What was your gist of the whole thing?
Well, my take on it, at least the stuff that I read about it, the reviews in the papers, most of the reviews that I read were very favorable.
Mm-hmm.
As far as what people who, I guess you could say, were on the scene, as far as what they thought about the book, I found that there were, in fact, mixed feelings. Some people thought that the book kind of belittled certain characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that tended to annoy certain of those characters or people that those characters knew. And, I mean, personally, in lots of ways, I think that things were oversimplified to an extent, which I guess you would have to allow for, considering that they're trying to condense a lot of people, places, and events within, you know, 200-something pages. So a lot of details are going to get cut, and usually the first of those details to be considered are technical details.
Mm-hmm.
So in an effort to make the book as readable as possible to the most diversest of crowds who mm-hmm. would potentially be buying it, I guess that was something that needed to be done. Whether or not I like that, I mean, I would have liked it if the book could have shown a lot more technical things about how things really are.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I think that it made a lot of things come off as being a lot simpler and a lot less complex than they really were in real life while they were happening. And mm-hmm. I thought that there were a lot more issues at stake than were really delved into.
Well, one of the things that bugged me about the book was the fact they used the word gang so much. You know,
that seemed to be a big hype thing.
Yeah, it doesn't connotate a very, very good image, and in this case, I don't think it connotated a very accurate image.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you guys weren't, you weren't a street gang, you know, you were a bunch of people just getting together and doing things, much like we're doing tonight.
Well, that was a whole publicity thing, especially when we first got indicted. All the headlines were screaming about gang wars in cyberspace and all kinds of silly nonsense mm-hmm. like that.
Well, that's because you had inner city kids for the first time involved in this kind of thing. So, you know, do you remember they kept saying computer wilding too?
Yeah,
that was another big catchphrase they liked to use.
Yeah,
I was pretty disappointed to see the book do that, to go to the lowest common denominator and use words like that to kind of provide a hitch.
Well, I think that we spent lots of time, myself and the other people involved in providing Josh and Michelle the material itself, the facts about what really happened, and we painstakingly went over the fact that there's mm-hmm. really no gang, there's no gang war, there aren't really any... You know, there's basically a disagreement between a couple of people in New York and in Texas, and it was blown all out of proportion. While at the same time focusing around a major federal indictment.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that I could hold the authors as responsible as possibly the editors or the agent
mm-hmm.
in doing the most that they possibly could to sway things in the wrong direction to hype up the book with the whole gang war connotation.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, though, how was it as far as telling the story? It is an interesting story to read. I won't take that away from it. It's interesting to read. No question about
that.
Yeah,
it is a quick read. It does, I guess in most ways it reads well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not going to argue about, you know, if it could have been written better. It's written and it's out. So it is, in fact, a quick read. I think people will enjoy reading it, at least in providing some insight, which I don't think any books really out there right now can provide any contemporary insight in the least, as far as what hackers are thinking and mm-hmm. and to some extent what they're doing, what their interests are.
Mm-hmm. To quote from the 2600 review of this in our most recent issue, actually, the Spring 95 issue, seems like it came out so long ago, too. If Masters of Deception has any weakness, it's in trying to simplify a story that could fill volumes to something under 226 pages. To give you some perspective, Fiber Optic's indictment alone could fill volumes. While I certainly respect the magnitude of Sotala's and Quitner's undertaking, I sometimes cringe at the result, a sort of fun-to-read children's story for adults. What do you think? But, I think that wraps it up pretty good, actually. That's our review of it in the current 2600. A review that was written without the use of the following terms: cyberpunk, cyberspace, digital highway, global network, infobahn, infoway, information superhighway, cracker, and on-ramp. So, a little effort you can avoid using those terms as well. All right, so here's our deal. We're offering that book plus a subscription to 2600 Magazine. The two items are not in any way connected. make that clear right now. For a pledge of $100, you'll get a hard copy version of that book and a paperback version of 2600 Magazine for a year, delivered to wherever it is you tell us to deliver it to. That's for $100, 212-279-3400. Remember, we take Visa and we take MasterCard. And this is a way for you to find out for yourself what it all means, what the book is all about, what the magazine is all about, to sort of venture into this world and become part of the whole crazy scene. So we only have a few of those too, though, so please give us a call and be one of the people that that are a part of this whole magical, mystical world of hackers and cyberspace. Here are some of the characters. I'm gonna read your description here, okay? And so you're gonna be a little embarrassed here. Fiber Optic. I won't read people's real names because I'm sure people listening that aren't here right now might not like that. I don't blame them. This is how it's described in the book. Meet the cool dudes of Masters of Deception. Cool spelled K-E-W-L, dude spelled D-00-D-S. Yeah. 212-279-3400, please call and pledge for this. Fiber Optic, a precocious teen from Queens who developed a love for computers at an early age. Fiber grew into an expert hacker, a pioneer on the electronic frontier. Able to best even the most complex security systems and explore classified telephone company computer systems to learn them firsthand, where his knowledge and prowess got him admitted into the exclusive hacker gang, the Legion of Doom. His hot temper and New Yorker's arrogance got him kicked out of the same gang, creating a rift between the LOD and Fiber's new pals, the Masters of Deception, which would eventually explode into war. Would you say that's an accurate assessment?
It's an interesting assessment. How accurate it is? Oh,
that's kind of how the book is. Yeah. It reads well. It's fun to read, but it's not necessarily the way things happened. You know, that's what you got to remember here. I would almost say that it would make a good mystery, make a good novel. As far as a documentary, I don't know.
The way I saw it best described in certain reviews in the papers was a sort of cyberspatial West Side Story.
Well, there you go. With that kind of retort, it's guaranteed to spark some interest. Okay, again, 212-279-3400. Pledge of $100, you get that, you get the book, the whole thing, hardcover, and you get the Hacker Quarterly 2600 magazine, where you can find out the latest in hacker lore, delivered right to your door, your P.O. box, or to someone else's door, if you so desire. So you'll be pretty much as into the hacker world as you can possibly get, I guess. Without actually hacking yourself. Although when you get on certain federal lists, I don't know. I don't know. They'll think you're guilty of something no matter what. Eric Bloodaxe, a middle-class kid from suburban Houston. Eric, frontman for the Legion of Doom, was responsible for initiating and blackballing Fiber Optic from the gang. As the hacker war began to heat up, and the federal government was starting to crack down on hackers, Bloodaxe and the LOD changed their allegiance, offering to help corporations and law enforcement agencies fight the hackers he was once in league with. What do you think of that one?
Well,
I don't know. Well, you have your protagonist and your antagonist here. You know, you got people battling each other. You got, you know, all the settings for some sort of a conflict.
Yeah, the whole Jets versus Sharks thing.
That's basically it. Yeah. Mods and rockers. All right, enough of that. That's how you got in trouble last time. Okay, now let's go to some more New York people. And if they're listening, hey, how you doing? Corrupt, a class clown from Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn. Corrupt ran with a street gang until he was picked up for attempted mugging. Turning his life around, Corrupt put his energies toward hacking with his cheap Commodore 64 computer. Once again, Commodore computers, leading to something bigger. All right, putting his energies toward hacking with his cheap Commodore 64 computer held together with tape. In no time, he became a brilliant hacker, an expert in complex VAX systems that allowed him access to computers owned by Bank of America, TRW, and even the National Security Administration. When he heard an LOD member refer to him as nigger, he drew battle lines for his attack on the Texas gang. And that's not entirely the way it went, was it?
Well, it wasn't as much of a turning point as they make it seem like in the book. I mean, it was certainly something that did in fact happen. Mm-hmm. Who it was that actually said that to John, or Corrupt, mm-hmm. on the conference bridge in question, I don't know if Corrupt himself knows. He probably does. Mm-hmm. But I don't know necessarily that that was such a major turning point.
Well, according to the book, things were never the same again.
Yeah, it was this pivotal moment, this cataclysmic event.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, for the purposes of you know, a piece of fiction that you're trying to, you know, to demonstrate conflict, that would be the turning point. In real life, however, things like that are not the turning points. Turning points are far more subtle than that. I guess it's really not possible to capture it, but I don't know. I just want to set the record straight, because we are pretty much involved with the people that are mentioned here, focused upon here, and we do know some of the facts, most of the facts, I would say, involving the case. So I'm not saying, you know, the book is not something you would want to read. The book is something you would want to read. You should probably look at all books about this kind of thing. You should read The Hacker Crackdown. You should read Cyberpunk and you know, Cuckoo's Egg and all that, or whatever. It's something that I think we need to keep updated on. And this is a good opportunity for people to be a part of this. Continuing with our list of characters, Scorpion, valedictorian of Thomas A. Edison High School, class of 1988. Scorpion was hacker the moment he... I don't know why they say it that way. Scorpion was hacker the moment he began playing with computers. Maybe they left out a word there. A master of the programming language... What programming language, Fiber?
I believe they're about to say BASIC.
Yes, very good. I'm just testing you there. Scorpion spent his early adolescence cracking codes and copying expensive video games. By high school, he was hooked up to a modem. Well, again, that's a little misleading. His computer was hooked up to a modem. He was actually able to go outside and do all the normal things. They really make it seem like these people are addicted to these things. By high school, he was hooked up to a modem and was able to best systems far more complex than those protecting the boyish video games. And finally, we have Acid Freak, chronicler of MOD's picture. I don't know how to say that word. I don't know if that is even a word. Well, picturesque adventures. Or is it picaresque adventures?
Picturesque.
Well, they're two different words.
Well, what word do you think they're trying to say here?
How do they spell it?
It's P-I-C-A-R-E.
Picaresque.
Picaresque?
Yeah.
How does that differ from picturesque?
Picturesque means it's visually appealing. Picaresque, the origins is Renaissance Spanish.
I don't care about the origins. What does it mean?
Having to do with the countryside, you know, a traveling story usually. Bucolic to some extent.
What does that have to do with hacking?
Okay. The Three Musketeers and Don Quixote are picaresque novels, okay?
Okay, so we got the Don Quixote element introduced here. All right, well, anyway, with regards to all that, Acid's file, the history of MOD, made legends of the gang. Yeah, there's that word again. The gang that he, Fiber, and Scorpion had created as a joke to annoy the elite LOD. Now, you see, it's good that they at least say that it was created as a sort of a joke.
It's good to say that, yeah, it was in fact created as sort of a joke, only it was in existence before I met some of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And it existed then as more or less a joke, but I mean, it's not as if we sat down around, or you know, mm-hmm. like Knights of the Round Table, and like formed this pact that we would seek the Grail.
There was no, and you didn't dress in armor and all that.
No,
go out and raids and things like that. Boy, I'm even learning something here. Along with the rest of the gang, there it is again. Along with the rest of the gang, he vaulted electronic fences, obtained access to classified information, made brash proclamations in Harper's Magazine, and clashed with the Legion of Doom. You know, and it's not as if he wasn't invited to make brash proclamations in Harper's Magazine.
That's
in fact,
true.
They wanted him to do that. So that's the Meet the Cool Dudes of Masters of Deception blurb that came with the book, and all kinds of other little items here. But I think it's, you know, even though I have problems with some of the way the book is written, I still think it's a good deal because you're supporting the radio station, you're learning something, you're getting one aspect of the story, and, you know, when we make reference to these things in the future, you'll be able to keep up. You'll know what's going on. And it's an interesting story. It is well written. It's kind of, I wasn't able to put it down. I think I read it, I was traveling from New York to D.C. on a train, and I think I read the whole thing in one sitting. So that's the kind of book it is. So for a pledge of $100, which really is not that much, especially if you do a Visa MasterCard type of thing with it, you'll get that. You'll get the 2600 magazine for a full year. That's four action-packed issues. We just recently expanded. We're now 56 pages as opposed to 48 pages. And you'll also get the WBAI folio delivered to your door every single month. And, you know, that's really the only way to know what's on this radio station at various times. That's how I found out I was on for 2 hours and 45 minutes tonight, by looking at the folio, because there's really no other way to know. You know, this radio station is not like other ones. You can't turn it on and you know, hear classic rock. You can't turn it on and hear grunge. You can't turn it on and hear, you know, the modern rock, alternative sounds, classical music, jazz, country, whatever all the other stations are doing 24 hours a day. You know, they all do the same thing. They're pretty much programmed. That's the jazz station, that's the country station, that's the news station. We're the station, you never know what's going to happen next. And that's kind of the way we like it, that's kind of the way the listeners like it. But you need that program guide in order to know what's going on. So, 212-279-3400. There's no more calls on the line, so I know there are people out there. We're up to 1450. There's probably more coming in, I hope there is. But the phone lines are dead right now. We'd like to see them all light up. 212-279-3400. Call in for the Masters of Deception book and the subscription to the magazine. If you want to spend a little less, you can get a subscription to the magazine and a 2600 T-shirt for a pledge of $75. And again, that 2600 T-shirt is rumored to be in its last printing. So once they're gone, they're gone. And you can guarantee one for yourself by calling now, 212-279-3400. The shirts have a schematic of a blue box on the front and a whole bunch of newspaper articles on the back. I've gotten into so many discussions with people wearing that shirt. You know, people stop you and they say, oh, you're a hacker? Do you know people at 2600 Magazine? You know, it can be annoying, but it can also be fun. If it's annoying, you'd simply throw a shirt on over it. But it's a good way to impress friends, too, you know? It's like, boy, I got this because I'm a friend of WBAI, you know, that neat radio station that has Off the Hook on it. And a lot of people have gotten turned on to BAI through Off the Hook, and that's really a good thing to see. It's a lot of us coming together and sharing knowledge, sharing enthusiasm, sharing information, coming from all different walks of life. It's sort of like going to college in a way, you know, learning all you possibly can. 212-279-3400. We have two phone calls on the line. We have capacity for seven altogether. 212-279-3400. You know, you really shouldn't be throwing paper airplanes around the studio. It's not a professional way. I mean, they do it on nightly news. Yes, we know. We all saw that once. But not here. We're a little more professional than that. Yeah, it's been a long night. We have four phone calls. Now, Fiber, you're going to get the next phone call.
I am.
You're going to convince the next person to call in. Because you're throwing the paper airplane, you're gonna now get someone to call in the phone. All right, we're waiting for that fifth line to light up.
Okay.
You have to get this phone call.
I have to get this phone
call. I'm not
gonna
say a word.
All right, but you are gonna tell me when they call in.
Maybe.
Oh, come on, be nice.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Let's see. I need a pitch, right?
Yeah, I've used up all the good ones.
Yeah. Well, you know, we haven't talked about.
For people that don't know, you're someone that has gone through the whole hacker process. You started off, you got really, really good, you met a lot of people, you got in trouble, you went to prison, and you came back. Now, how did BAI change any of that? Well, it didn't change what happened to you, but where would you be without BAI?
Well, I mean, we could talk about how I actually called in from prison, and we had some radio shows where I was actually live on the air.
That was neat.
Yeah. That was, and in fact, that was a great diversion while I was there.
In fact, you even put other prisoners on the air,
yeah,
and they were able to tell their story to all of New York.
That's correct.
That was really, really cool.
And I'm glad I got away with it.
Yeah, because that's not legal either to do that from prison.
Technically, it would be against the rules.
Mm-hmm. But, well, that's the only way you can survive in the society is to do things against the rules. Now, there's different rules. There's you know, moral conduct, and there's stupid rules that, you know, you just have to sort of get away with, like, you know, chewing gum in class and things like that. That's one of the good rules. I believe in that one. But never mind. You still have to get that phone call.
Okay, still haven't gotten the phone call.
You lost two, actually.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I mean, really, without our listeners' support for BAI, it would not have been possible, obviously, for me to call in from prison and to have prisoners' voices heard live on the air, because I don't think there would be any avenue for that to happen.
WABC does not have this kind of programming.
I don't think that they would.
WCBS does not have time for it. They have to give their traffic and weather together every 10 minutes.
And I don't think they would take calls from prisoners either.
Probably not. You see, most other stations represent the norms of society, where prisoners are looked at as bad, evil. You want to sweep them under the rug. You don't want to know about them. Here at BAI, we're willing to listen, to let people speak, to hear the other side of the story. And while, you know, you may not always agree with what you hear, at least you have the opportunity to hear the other side of the story. And that's something that I think is extremely important. And in our increasingly simplistic society, we have to always be open to potential questions, you know, questions that people don't want us to ask. It's important. Look at this. I'm doing it again. I'm the one talking. You should be talking. What's going on here? Go ahead. But you have to get this call. It still does not come in.
Oh, come on. You're lying to me. I just saw the number go up.
Well, the number doesn't go up until 10 minutes after the call comes in.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Now, I want this call coming in. Now, you have to get this call.
Okay.
You'll feel good after you do it. Just like the person out there will feel good after they... You say that. I'm not going to say
okay.
that.
Okay. Just like the person will feel good out there right after they pledge and they contribute to such a worthy cause.
Mm-hmm. Make us all stronger.
Yes, make us all stronger and... I'm sure they'll be feeling good vibes, and provided that they continue to listen to us every Wednesday night from 10 to 11, and possibly in the future they can come and join us at At Cafe, and after the show, that is.
The telephone rang, by the way, but they hung up.
I guess I got to put more umph into it.
Yeah, you got people to call, but you didn't get them to stay on the line.
Okay, I'm getting better.
Give the old phone number out.
Oh, the old phone number, yes. It's 279-3400.
Area code 212.
Area code 212.
Which is the most elite area code in the country.
That's the best one to have.
That's right. Well, there's no phone calls on the board right now. We got rid of them all. So.
Everybody else had a 212.
Okay, now, all right, we have two lines ringing, but they have to stay on the line. And they have to pledge.
Please, people, don't hang up.
Yeah, don't hang up. All right, one of them already hung up. Now the second one is online. The first one was ringing again. The second one is hung up. Now they're both ringing. This could go on for a very long time. People, we need real people out there, not just to call us, but to call us and pledge, because every little bit... Remember, we started at 9 o'clock. We were at zero. Now we're at 15:55. That's a lot of money. And there's no one person out there that pledged 15:55. A lot of people pledged... various amounts. Now we're giving suggested amounts, 75, 100. You don't have to pledge that. If you can't afford that, if you can only afford 25 or 50, by all means pledge what you can afford. And you know, you will always get the WBAI folio. There are all kinds of other premiums we have that are not related to the show that you can ask about. There's volunteers down there that are more than happy to answer your questions as far as that goes. And they'll work with you. It's not a combative situation. They're very friendly people. They're listeners to BAI just like you.